eKatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of eKatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are really getting into one of the most influential business books of the last couple of decades, Eric Ries's The Lean Startup.
Absolutely. It's kind of essential reading, isn't it? Especially now. It fundamentally shifted how people think about innovation and, well, just starting anything new.
It really did. Because you see it all the time, right? These incredibly smart people, brilliant ideas, maybe even lots of funding.
And yet, failure. So much failure.
Exactly. They crash and burn. And you have to wonder why. Ries points out that often it's because they're working off assumptions. They think they know what customers want.
They assume they know the market, the right features. And so they, you know, perfectly execute a plan.
To build something nobody actually needs. It's this massive, catastrophic waste.
And that's the core problem Ries wanted to solve. He saw that traditional business planning, you know, the big upfront five-year plan, works okay for established companies running known models.
But for startups, in that zone of extreme uncertainty, it's the wrong tool.
Completely. So he offers this alternative, a scientific iterative approach. It's about shifting the question from can we build this to the much more critical should we build this?
Let's talk about Eric Ries himself for a moment, because his background is key here, isn't it? He wasn't just an academic.
No, definitely not. He developed these ideas from, well, from hard-won experience, painful experience sometimes.
He was a co-founder and the CTO of IMVU. That's a 3D avatar social network.
Right. And it wasn't an instant success story. He's very open about their early struggles.
They did a classic thing, spent months in stealth mode building this really complex product packed with features they thought were essential.
And then the launch.
Yeah.
Crickets, basically.
Yeah.
Customers just weren't biting.
And that feeling that, oh, wow, we perfectly built the wrong thing, that's what forced them to change everything. They had to get lean, get iterative, just to survive.
So his perspective is grounded in reality. It's a practitioner's view. He blended his engineering background with ideas from lean manufacturing, like Toyota system, and agile software development.
Things you wouldn't necessarily put together.
Exactly. And he synthesized it into this coherent framework. He first started sharing it on his blog, Startup Lessons Learned, which became hugely influential, gave everyone a common language.
And part of that language is redefining what a startup even is. It's broader than most people think.
Much broader. He defines it as any human institution designed to create a new product or service under conditions of extreme uncertainty.
So that throws the net wide open. It's not just Silicon Valley tech.
Not at all. It applies inside big companies, entrepreneurs trying new things. It applies to nonprofits launching new programs, even government initiatives. Anywhere you've got that high uncertainty.
Well, and the core idea is this shift away from the lone genius visionary.
Right. Towards the entrepreneur as a scientist, conducting experiments.
Okay.
Because if you're dealing with unknowns, you have to test your assumptions. You can't just guess.
So what's the actual goal then, if it's not immediately about making money or just building the product?
The primary goal, according to Ries, is learning, specifically achieving what he calls validated learning.
Validated learning. Okay, what does that mean exactly?
It means learning, confirmed by real customer behavior, about how to build a sustainable business. It's not about what people say in surveys. It's about what they do. That's the real progress metric.
And the engine for this learning is the famous feedback loop.
The build, measure, learn loop. Yes. Yeah. It's this constant cycle. You build something small and experiment, really. You measure how customers react. Then you learn from that data and decide what to do next.
Build, measure, learn, repeat.
Exactly. And you need to cycle through it as fast as humanly possible, because speed of learning is your advantage. That learn step is often the hardest, though. It means facing the data, even if it tells you your brilliant idea isn't working.
So when you're in that loop, what are you actually testing? What are the key experiments?
Ries boils it down to two fundamental hypotheses you absolutely must test. First, the value hypothesis.
Does this thing actually deliver value? Will people use it? Maybe even pay for it.
Precisely. And second, the growth hypothesis. How will people find out about this? How will it scale? What are the channels? Does the viral loop work?
Okay, so every experiment, every feature, every marketing test should really be aimed at learning something about one of those two.
That's the discipline. Otherwise, you're just, you know, building stuff without a clear learning goal.
Which brings us to maybe the most famous concept from the book, the MVP. The minimum viable product.
Ah, yes, the MVP. so often misunderstood.
People think it's just a basic version 1.0, right?
Yeah.
Like fewer features.
Yeah, or like a buggy prototype. But that's not quite it. The definition is really specific. It's the version of the product that lets you collect the maximum amount of validated learning about customers with the least amount of effort.
Maximum learning, minimum effort. So its job isn't to be perfect. Its job is to start the learning loop fast.
Exactly. It's a tool for learning. Think about Zappos early on.
Right. The online shoe store. The hypothesis was, will people actually buy shoes online? Big question back then.
Huge. Instead of building warehouses and complex logistics, the founder, Nick Swinmurn, ran a super low-tech MVP. He went to local shoe stores,
took photos,
put them online on a basic website. If someone ordered, he'd literally go buy the shoes from the store and ship them himself.
Wow. Minimal investment.
With maximum learning about whether the core idea of buying shoes online was viable, he validated the demand before spending big.
Or the Dropbox example. Their tech was complicated, syncing files seamlessly.
Very complicated. Yeah. Building it would take ages. So what did they do for an MVP?
A video.
A simple video. Just explaining what Dropbox would do, showing how it worked conceptually.
And the response was huge, wasn't it?
Massive. Hundreds of thousands signed up for the beta just from that video. It proved enormous demand before they'd finished writing all that complex code. That's an incredibly effective MVP. It validated the core value proposition.
Okay, so you've built your MVP, you've put it out there, now you measure. And Rees warns us about certain kinds of metrics here.
Yes, the dreaded vanity metrics.
Yeah.
Things like cumulative registered users or total downloads. They look good on a chart going up and to the right.
It makes everyone feel good.
But they often hide serious problems. Like if your downloads are high, but almost nobody sticks around after a week, that rising curve is masking imminent doom. They don't help you make decisions.
So what's the alternative?
Innovation accounting. It's a more rigorous way to measure progress, focused on actionable metrics that show cause and effect. It's basically a three-step process.
Yeah, okay.
Establish the baseline. Use your MVP to get your starting numbers for key metrics, conversion rates, retention rates, whatever matters most.
Get your benchmark. Then step two.
Tune the engine. You make specific changes. Could be an A/B test, a new feature, a different onboarding flow. But crucially, you need to predict how that change will affect your baseline metrics.
So it's scientific. You have a hypothesis about the change's impact.
Exactly. You're not just randomly tweaking things. You test if your changes actually improve the numbers towards your ideal goal.
And if they don't, if you tune and the engine just isn't improving enough.
Then you hit step three, pivot or persevere. You make a hard decision based on the data. But before that big decision, Rees stresses understanding why things aren't working.
This is where the five whys come in, right? From Toyota.
Yes. Such a powerful tool. When something goes wrong, a server crashes, a feature fails, don't just fix the surface problem, ask why. Five times to dig down to the root cause.
Often a human or process issue, not just technical.
Usually. Like, why did the server crash? Because a patch wasn't tested. Why wasn't it tested? Because the team is rushed. Why are they rushed? Because management prioritizes speed over stability. You get to the real organizational issue.
Which helps you build a more adaptive system overall. Okay, so after all that learning and measuring, you might decide you need to pivot.
Right. And a pivot isn't just, you know, canicking and changing everything randomly. It's defined as a structured course correction designed to test a new fundamental hypothesis.
Structured. Data-driven. You learned your old hypothesis was wrong, so now you form a new, educated one and change direction strategically to test it.
Exactly. And there are different types. Like a zoom-in pivot, where one feature turns out to be the whole product.
Or a customer segment. Pivot, the product's great, but you were targeting the wrong people.
Right. It's a strategic reset, not a failure. And the final piece is about accelerating this whole build, measure, learn cycle.
Speeding up the learning.
Yeah. Here he draws heavily on lean manufacturing, particularly the idea of small batches.
Instead of building a massive version 2.0 over a year,
you release small updates constantly, maybe multiple times a day, like many software companies do now with continuous deployment.
Seems counterintuitive, maybe riskier.
You'd think so, but small batches actually reduce risk.
Mm.
You get feedback faster, catch errors sooner, and minimize the amount of work potentially wasted if you're heading in the wrong direction. Less waste, faster learning.
Okay, so stepping back, what are the big overarching themes someone should take away from the lean startup?
Well, the first one has to be that validated learning is the ultimate metric. That's the real measure of progress in uncertainty.
Not just being busy, not just lines of code. Are we actually learning what works? That fundamentally changes how you think about success.
Absolutely. Which leads to the second theme. Customer development precedes product development.
Get out of the building. Don't just assume you know. Talk to customers. Observe them before you invest heavily in building the solution. Validate the problem first.
It counters that build it and they will come fantasy. You have to systematically figure out the customer and market as you build or even before.
Makes sense. Third theme.
The relentless focus on the elimination of waste. And the biggest waste isn't office supplies.
It's building something nobody wants. All that time, talent, money, gone. Every principle in the book aims to minimize that specific kind of waste. It's about efficiency in the truest sense.
And finally, maybe the most empowering theme. Entrepreneurship is management.
Meaning it's not just some mystical art form for geniuses.
Right. It's a discipline. It requires specific management practices, a scientific approach. It can be learned. It can be taught. It democratizes innovation, suggesting success can be engineered through process, not just pure vision.
The book is also full of memorable lines, isn't it?
Mm.
Phrases that became part of the startup vocabulary.
Definitely. It gave innovators a shared language. One key quote really captures the urgency. The only way to win is to learn faster than anyone else.
In uncertain environments, speed of learning is the competitive advantage. Adapt or die, basically.
Pretty much. And then there's the MVP definition quote we touched on. The minimum viable product is that version of a new product which allows a team to collect the maximum amount of validated learning about customers with the least effort.
Just constantly reinforcing. It's a learning tool first and foremost.
And this one shifts the focus nicely. Success is not delivering a feature. Success is learning how to solve the customer's problem.
Moving from output, feature shipped, to outcome, customer problem solved. That's a big mental shift for many teams.
Huge. So, thinking about listeners, how can they apply this build, measure, learn thinking, even if they're not launching a tech startup?
Well, it's already happening widely. Think about large companies' entrepreneurs. GE famously used these ideas in their Fastworks program. They'd test a new product feature as an MVP with just a small user segment.
Measure the results rigorously, learn, and then decide whether to roll it out fully or pivot. Much less risky than a giant launch based on assumptions.
And nonprofits. Scarce resources there.
Perfect application. Launching a new social program. Treat it as a hypothesis. Run a small pilot your MVP in one community. Measure actionable metrics, like real changes in health outcomes or employment rates.
Learn what actually works on the ground before asking for big grants. Prove the impact first.
Exactly. And you can even apply it personally, thinking about a career change.
Don't just quit your job and enroll in a long degree program right away.
Maybe not. Test the hypothesis first. Take a small freelance project in that field. Take one online course. That's your career MVP. Measure. Did you enjoy it? Is there market demand? Is it viable for you?
Then you can pivot, maybe try a related field or persevere and commit more fully, but based on actual data about the fit, less risk, more learning.
It brings that same experimental rigor to life decisions.
What really struck me rereading this is the focus on building an adaptive organization. It's not just a set of tactics, it's a culture. Using tools like the 5 Whys forces you to fix the underlying system, not just the immediate problem.
Mm-hmm.
That creates resilience.
For me, the core takeaway is always that fundamental question shift, moving beyond can we build this, which engineers love to answer,
yes,
to the much harder, much more important strategic question, should we build this? And demanding evidence, not just opinion, to answer it. It really does try to turn the often chaotic art of innovation into more of a manageable, teachable science.
A powerful framework for navigating uncertainty. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.